Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Today's special guest is Seth Walsh. He is the new Cincinnati City Council person. He comes to the job. He is, for the last 7 years, has been the director of the College Hill Community Urban Redevelopment Corporation. They're called
Easy
KIRCs.
For you to say.
They're called KIRCs. I'm actually looking at it right now. I never remember. You know what? I like to say he led the renaissance of what's happening in College Hill now. He doesn't say that himself. He always is like the people who came before me. In fact, Reggie Harris, who did the selection of he's replacing Greg Landsman. And Reggie actually said one of the things that impressed him the most about Seth is that when he was asking about Seth, that Seth took credit for some of the things, but not all the credit. He said Seth sounded like a leader, but was so inclusive in a job interview. But he was like, this is what happened before me, and this is what's happening now, and these other people are doing these things. And Reggie said, to me, that was like a real servant leader, and it was one of the reasons why he chose Seth. So anyway.
I would put College Hill on my top five list of neighborhoods that have shown surprising improvement. You called it a renaissance, but it's just a happening place again.
You know, and there are some neighborhoods that really have been a priority of the city of Cincinnati that got a lot of investment by design. These neighborhoods and, you know, kind of seeing how that would go, and that's not good or bad, but really in College Hill, it's a lot of very self-driven, like they got grants and started small and they bought this building and that building earned revenue and they used that revenue. So it was a lot of, you know, really neighborhood support to get that done. So anyway, I'm looking forward to chatting with him more. I've interviewed him a lot, but he's an interesting guy.
He is, and it kind of fits into what's been happening in the news this week. The dust has settled a little bit. The other shoes have, you know, metaphorically dropped. We have a police chief now, not just an interim police chief, but a police chief. We have
Teresa Thiege.
Yeah.
That leaked. Seth leaked.
Let's talk about that leak for a minute. Can we talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, sure.
You know, in our field, when news leaks, we have to obviously weigh the credibility of the source. But when the president of the FOP or the, you know, someone who's really tied into the police organization kind of scoops the city in making an announcement, I found that a little bit, not surprising, but a little surprising. Like, it's not really Dan Hill's job to make that announcement, but boy, no, he had no qualms about telling people and letting him be the source.
That is true. And I haven't really ascertained why. Like, what was there a benefit or what would be the motivation to not just wait for the city manager to say? I mean, it was coming. It's not like there's a crisis, actual crisis at the moment where it's like, well, we have to say who the next chief is. And it was interesting how that came to be. But you know what? One of the best things about Dan Hills is he says exactly what he's thinking, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
No, we love people who are not afraid to speak and go on the record. But I thought that was a little bit unusual and probably not how the city wanted it to play out. But
you know, they're trying to be very methodical about what they're doing. And honestly, at the forefront of City Hall this week was the property tax increase, was, you know, Seth is being, you know, selected. There was a press conference and they were trying to kind of do things in a more like rhythm way of like each thing gets its own attention. But it turns out you can write four stories in one day. Who knew?
Who knew? That was a very busy day. Yeah.
It's been a while, but I did it.
So what I'm hearing about Chief Thiege is that everybody feels pretty good about the selection. She's definitely earned it. She's come up through the ranks. She comes from a law enforcement family. She has a lot of institutional knowledge. The knock I'm hearing is that the candidate pool was pretty small for a job this important, that whether it's the search committee, whether it's the city, that the list of candidates as a whole, nothing against anyone that was on it, but that for a job this important, people expected to see some, have it be more competitive, have some more maybe nationally known people from the world of law enforcement. Would you say that's a fair sort of like general summary of how this went down?
I definitely do. And I think that there was a feeling out there, and this is also true of the city manager search, because that list was also, you know, smaller than people had thought that it would be. And I think that people are really starting to look at Cincinnati is that we're going to choose from within. So why put yourself out there? I have to give them props for this. These candidates were really out there. These two outside candidates, and neither one of them are like had a working job at the moment, making it easier for them to do this, had to come here, say, I want your job, and answer questions from the public in the public. That is very hard to do. You know, that was the balancing act, right? I'm so super glad they did that, but it's a balancing act for the person who's doing it. And I'm not sure everyone was assured that they were getting a fair chance. And I think that was true of the city manager. John Kerp seemed like he was a shoe-in, and I don't think people wanted to put themselves out there when they saw what his contract was going to look like. So they're like, oh, well, they're never going to let him go, because that's a very generous settlement package. It's clear he's staying. And I think that people, they don't want to take the risk, because these jobs are public risks that you have to, you know, tell people who are going to know what you're doing. Of course, my argument, because, you know, some people at City Hall might have said, oh, Sherry, if you keep writing about all this, no one's going to want to come. But my thing is, if you're so great, go to your boss and be like, hey, guess what? Cincinnati wants me. I'm on their short list. Thoughts? And, you know, and see how you're – these are all governments. They're not just going to fire you out of hand because you applied for another job somewhere else.
I mean, even in the private sector, if you have a good job, you don't want to send the signal to your current employer that you're looking, that you're not loyal. So you have to kind of tread carefully. I think that's like amplified 10 times when you're a government employee, a public employee. So I kind of get that a little bit. And I also think whether it's a private company or a city, a municipality, we go through cycles. I think Cincinnati's currently in this, we need to promote from within. We have talented people. We've been burned in the past by going to the outside. Let's reward the loyalty. Institutional knowledge is important. So you saw that with the city manager pick. You saw that with the police chief. But the city has gone through cycles, phases where the desire is to go outside. Like, we need to add to our DNA. We need to get fresh perspective. I just think it's a cyclical thing. And I just see us in this sort of like, hey, we are going to, you know, we have talented people here. We don't need to look too far to find the right person. Whether that's right or wrong, I mean, I'm not here to say, but I just kind of sense that that's sort of where we are right now.
Actually, I agree with that.
You agree with me for a change? All right. Well,
I did from the beginning believe that it wouldn't have going to be either, you know, Chief Thiege now or Lisa Davis, the two internal candidates.
Right.
I did think that.
Well, and again,
that's where we were headed.
Back to the union, the police union. Dan Hills had said previously that their recommendation was one of the internal candidates. So that could have been a little bit of foreshadowing. You're nodding, but you're not looking convinced.
I'm thinking. I think it was foregone conclusion even before he said that.
You think so?
I think he was trying to shake loose who it was by saying that and talking about that it needs to be this and da-da-da-da. I don't think there was really a movement afoot for it to be either of the two outside candidates. I think he was trying to shake loose who it was going to be.
Right. Okay. Well, so yeah. Lots of things are in place now. We have the police chief. We have the city manager. Greg Landsman won his election to Congress. That created a hole. And now we have Seth Walsh ready to take over.
It was a long goodbye yesterday. It was Greg Landsman's last council meeting.
Tell me a little bit about that before we talk to Seth.
You know, Greg really did. It was like an Oscar speech. Greg, like, thanked everybody. And it was really sweet. And this job, Greg is actually, I mean, one word I would use to describe him is actually sensitive, of like all like feeling the things. And
I think that's an act. I think that's a superpower.
He
comes across as sensitive, but deep down inside, he's a cutthroat politician, knows how to get things done.
Well,
or how to get his way.
He did defeat Steve Chabot, but in his heart, he is... He's a softy. Remember the story I wrote about the three Afghan refugee women?
Absolutely.
That came from him. He wanted no credit for that. But he is the one who's like, I heard about these women and I had to help them. And like, I told their story, but not through Greg's eyes.
Right.
But he moved them into his house.
Right. Yeah.
He didn't, that's how I heard
about
it.
He didn't just help them by writing a check or connecting them with someone who could help.
Oh, he's like, you need somewhere to live? Yeah. Okay. You could live in my house.
No, that's, that tells a lot about Greg.
It really
for
does.
For sure. So when you said it was an Oscar-like speech, did he get played off the stage with music or did it go on and on and on?
He got played off by the mayor. It's like, oh, I have these two proclamations I need to read real quick. To be fair, Seth is being sworn in on Monday the 19th, and it's technically Greg's last day. I expect a second Oscar speech that day from him, as he's really his last meeting, but that was his last council meeting.
Gotcha. All right. Well, let's talk to Seth.
Let's do it. All right. It's already special guest time. As we said earlier today, our special guest is Seth Walsh. So basically, it's like, meet Seth Walsh, your new council member. There's no better way to do it. Not that my stories aren't fabulous, than to hear them in their own words and really talking and hear their personalities and everything. So welcome, Seth.
Hey, Sherry. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say you're kind of busy this week.
Yes, a little bit. We're surviving. I'm excited for next week to get started officially.
So first, tell us what made you throw your hat into the ring for Cincinnati City Council.
Well, I've been working with City Council for, gosh, the last 10 years. I mean, it's actually where I got my career started at. But working with it really closely in Sedansville and in College Hill, I've seen the positive impact that City Council and the City of Cincinnati can have on neighborhoods. And I'm really passionate about neighborhood revitalization in an equitable and balanced manner. And so I started thinking this year, like, I really like what City Council is doing and where the mayor and the administration are taking us. And I think I have a skill set in my time here in College Hill that can really help enhance it. And so I was starting to think about running in 2023 with Congressman-elect Landsman's election to Congress, obviously. I was like, why not throw my hat in the ring and see if it pays off? And here we are, getting appointed to City Council next week.
How many times have you been to City Hall kind of before this process? Did your work in College Hill bring you to City Hall?
Oh, yeah, all the time. And not necessarily City Hall in the traditional sense that you think of the gorgeous building, but, you know, 2 Centennial Plaza. I mean, I've been working with the city administration almost every day for my entire career. And then working with the elected side of it as well. I'm pretty constantly down there. We always had another project coming up, or just kind of being aware of what's happening at City Hall. It was really integral to have my success in College Hill. So it's not something that I'm unfamiliar with.
So I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast before you joined us that what your job is and everything with College Hill, but kind of take us back. I know you went to Xavier University. We talked a little bit about how did you come to, you know, really be a neighborhood liaison? Because you didn't even start in College Hill. You did start in Sedansville.
Yeah. So actually it dates back to Greg Landsman 10 years ago. I graduated from Xavier University. I knew I loved Cincinnati, but I didn't have anything lined up when I graduated. I had some jobs lined up, and I had a job lined up in DC. I turned it down the night before I was supposed to go out there and said, I'm going to stay in Cincinnati. I'm going to figure it out. Worked for a little bit at City Hall at the time I'd been interning for Councilmember Chris Seelbach, and then I started working for Councilmember Pam Thomas, who lost re-election. So I was unemployed about 6 months after I graduated from Xavier. So I just ran around the city talking to anybody and everybody and talking about why I love Cincinnati and the impact I wanted to have on Cincinnati. And Greg said, it sounds like you want to work in community development. So I said, yes, it does. I don't know what that means, but it sounds like I want to work in community development. And so Greg ended up introducing me to some community leaders who ended up getting me connected with the CDC Association that's now called Homebase. And Patricia Gary took me under her wing, started teaching me how community development worked, and then ultimately got me connected in Sedamsville, where they were trying to start a CDC. And so I got this opportunity to learn the macro side of community development with the CDC Association, working with all the big players in the community development space, and really starting to understand how you transform a neighborhood in a really positive, equitable way. And then I got the micro perspective of walking, you know, block by block, house by house in Sedamsville and seeing, you know, what does it mean for a community to have a vision and trying to figure out how you can make that happen. And so those two things really started coming together. And I did that for about two and a half years. And College Hill came calling because they were looking for an executive director to kind of help them navigate their transition from all volunteer to staff. They just really liked what they saw me doing in Sedamsville. And, you know, as much as I was taking a chance on College Hill, you know, being able to achieve what their vision was, they were taking a chance on me, being a young, I was 25 at the time, taking a chance on me to be able to reach my potential. And it was a match made in heaven at the right time. And the organization was growing as I was growing and learning. And, you know, through that, I, you know, made my fair share of mistakes and failures, but I used it all as an opportunity to continue to grow and learn. And ultimately, that's what kind of put me in this position as a community leader, is because I was never too ashamed to say, like, oh, I messed up. Let's listen to what I did wrong there and let's try to learn and grow.
But you came to the job in a much, we think of College Hill now as the renaissance that has happened while you were there, but with, you know, big developments on the corners and then the downtown district that you've developed. And we could talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, at the time, though, you were able to do that, it seems like, in a more low-key way, right? Like, you came, was it, were you a staff of one?
Yep. Yeah, I was literally just myself. I would get bored in the office and just do laps around it to try to hit the, you know, 1,000 steps or whatever an hour you had to do on your watch. Yeah, it was just me.
If you climb the stairs at City Hall, you like get halfway there. Just a pro tip.
good to know.
So, Sherry touched on the fact that you you went to Xavier, political science major. When you ask somebody, what do you want to be when you grow up? You don't hear community development very much. What led you to pursue political science, and was taking on an elected position in the plan?
This was not in the plan. I've told a few people this story over the last week, but I got a degree in poli-sci actually because I wanted to become a lobbyist for NASA. I just really loved the space race of the 1960s, and I believe that so much of the technological advances that we see today is because people were inspired by our, you know, attempts to go to the moon in the 1960s and our ability to ultimately do it. You know, every dollar that was spent on that ended up impacting, you know, our local economy. It didn't get spent in space. So I really wanted to be a part of that type of mindset. And I thought, well, I have a couple things going against me. One, I didn't find myself to be particularly good at science. And two, I gave up thickness really easily. So going to the moon was kind of ruled out from there. And so I was trying to figure out what that path could look like. And so I got into poli-sci because I thought, hey, I could become a lobbyist for NASA and take it, you know, help NASA get there and then feel like I was part of it. So that's a long way from community development. And ultimately what I found when I was working at City Hall and I was assumed by President Xavier was how much I love doing impactful projects that really help positively change people's lives. And that sounds like it has to be a big thing, but it's really not. You know, it's as simple as a few months ago, we dealt with a neighbor. It's not technically part of my job description, but I love doing this type of stuff. It's like somebody had a coyotes living in their backyard and they didn't know who to talk to because they weren't getting any response from city departments. So they reached out to me because I'm a public face in College Hill. I was able to connect with some people at City Hall who made the connection. The problem got resolved for them in a way that was good for the neighbor, but also good for the coyotes. So that was the type of work that I really found myself drawn to and I really loved doing. And that's why Greg Lansman was like, sounds like you want to work in community development. And I didn't know what it was at the time because to your point, most people don't know what community development is. But as I learned more about it and I got more engaged in it and had the opportunities with it, it was spot on. I mean, it's exactly what I wanted to do in the work. And now as I look at and I'm making this transition, you know, I see the opportunities from my experience working in community development for how I can translate that to the whole city, not just in a community, in a one, you know, neighborhood community.
So I have to circle back to the coyote abatement that you enabled. I worked out west for a while, and I know how the ranchers would take care of coyotes. And you told me it was a good situation for the coyotes as well. Were they trapped and relocated?
It's honestly, I don't fully remember. My interaction was purely behind a screen. But I know we connected them with wildlife people that were able to come out and
gotcha.
I got a really positive email afterwards.
I bet.
I presume that's what happened.
I have to tell you, you have opened a can of worms for yourself. I mostly hear about garbage collection, litter. Those are like two big things, crime some. But I do get a fair amount of emails about coyotes. And people are like, what should I do? Da, 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 da. And it never really seems to go anywhere. So you brought it up. Good luck.
Hey, I mean, that's what it's about. You know, I feel like most of the issues that we're facing, what I want to bring to City Hall is the ability to provide answers and connections. Because I know from my own experience, you know, when I bought a house for the first time, I was like, who do you even call when the faucet's leaking? Like, obviously it's a plumber now, but I'm like, at the time, I don't know. How do I even find them? My refrigerator's making a weird noise. What do I do? And so if I can be a conduit and a liaison to help solve some of those things, to connect to the right people, I'm excited to be able to do that. Because again, those little things, I mean, that's a quality of life issue for a lot of people. So I know I opened a can of worms, but I'm excited to be able to open that can of worms and have an impact.
I do think people forget. Council does do a lot of work like that. Like, I don't usually report on that, right? Like, I'm like, oh, property tax, the big things, right, are going to hit the newspaper. But every council member does kind of have someone that does constituency work. Mayor Puraval has that. Like, there is a lot of that that happens in City Hall with 52 neighborhoods, and there's a lot of little problems.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, what I learned when I was at City Hall was the best members of council were the ones that were really working on the constituent side of things. Yes, you work on policy. Yes, we're trying to move the city forward, but we're also trying to make sure that all the little things are still being done and everyone's getting a chance to be heard. My office is going to be very open to be able to hear what those issues are out there, because the more we know about what's going on, the more we can, you know, continue to work to address it. And maybe there's a larger issue that nobody's realized, but we don't know it if you don't tell us about what's going on and how we can help.
So is there, your experience in College Hill, were there times that you were dealing with city council that you ended up being frustrated and thought, boy, if I had my chance to be on city council, this is how I would do things differently? Where do you see some opportunities for you to make some positive influence?
I don't know if I'd say I ever got frustrated working with city council. I think where I've seen myself over the years, you know, interacting and engaging with them is on some of the, you know, the topics I work on are affordable housing, small business support, economic development. And those get really complicated and tricky really quickly. And so what I think the reason why Reggie picked me is that I understand a lot of those, because that's been my area of expertise. And so being able to come in and elevate the conversation to say, okay, this is what we're trying to achieve, and we're trying to achieve it because of X, Y, and Z. I've had this experience having done this process, so how can we adjust it or fix it? You know, those are the areas that, unless you've lived it and experienced it and tried to do development and tried to do small business support and you find out where some of the roadblocks are in, you know, inadvertently, I think it's a little more difficult. So I think what I'm able to bring to the conversation is we're tackling housing and we're tackling some of these more complicated issues is the practical side of what I've done in College Hill. All right, I know what it's like to, you know, you see the success we've had in College Hill. It didn't happen without many roadblocks along the way that we had to clear, and without members of council and the mayor and city administration stepping up to help clear those. How can I be more proactive and be able to make sure other communities don't have to do that? And you don't have to know everybody at city council to be able to solve some of these problems, because our city functions best when it's not about who you know. It's about the work you're trying to do. And we need to clear those roadblocks so you can do that.
How would you grade the performance of the city supporting small businesses, from, you know, zero being too much red tape, too many different agencies, to 10 being streamlined and one-stop shop?
Remember, you already have the job.
I don't already have the job.
Because I'm fascinated by that aspect of economic development. We, you know, nobody will say we need fewer jobs, we need fewer small businesses, but yet, and I'm not talking about just Cincinnati, it can be very tough sometimes to navigate, you know, all the things a small business owner needs to do to get up and running.
Yeah, I think the city, like any, you know, large organization, has a fair amount of bureaucracy that it's difficult to say it's a 10, you know, well-oiled machine that's easy for everybody to utilize. I don't know where I'd rate it, probably somewhere around the 5-6 scale. You know, some days, and I mean, it's also case dependent, right? Some days I'll say it's a 7, the engagement that businesses get. I will say that the city and the administration is a 10 out of 10 in terms of what their desire is to really positively help and impact small businesses. But sometimes there are rules that have been put in place for, you know, years or decades that have none of us were ever around for while they're there that still cause holdups and hiccups along the way. I think that's where our job as city council is. Councilmember Johnson yesterday referred to the council as a cleanup council. And I think that's right. I think that's the way to think about it. There's a lot of these things that have existed that we didn't necessarily, that due to no fault of our own, are there now. And if we got to get them out of the way, it's going to get us closer to that 10 being a well-oiled machine.
I mean, Brawl doesn't know it, this, but I did jot down that term. I did think that was very interesting that he would kind of refer that. And he said a lot of the things they've done so far have been that, cleaning up past mistakes. And I thought that was an interesting concept.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to me because I think so often politicians are criticized for they just take short-term decisions and they don't think long-term. What I loved about that statement was that, and this is part of why I wanted to join this council, is they're willing to make the difficult decisions to get our city on the right path so that we can avoid some of the issues that are staring us in the future. And we can start getting innovative about how we can navigate around that. So we should shout that term everywhere, because that's exactly what I've heard people asking for during my tenure in Cincinnati, is they want responsible public leaders that are willing to make the difficult decisions for the betterment of the city. And that's what our job is. So I want to be part of that.
Have you had any surprises yet about what the job's going to be like, or is it too soon?
You know, I will say that I expected that I would hear from a fair amount of people. I thought I'd have a little bit longer runway before I started getting like a bunch of meeting requests. But I realized last night that I'm like getting a lot of meetings scheduled. So I guess I didn't fully appreciate how many people work with city council. But I think that's just part of the, you know, new job learning experience of like, wow, like we're touching a lot of areas. It's bigger than College Hill. But I think that's, again, just a new learning experience for me when you get like, oh, the Inquirer just reported on me, so now everyone wants to talk to me. But I'm excited to get back to everybody. I made a commitment to responding to everyone. And I've got a fun 10 months ahead, you know, learning a lot of things I probably have never even interacted with in the city before. And that's really exciting for me.
Do you have... I know it's very early, but do you have an idea, or what do you think will be some of the priorities or challenges that you will face on council or council as a whole? I mean, we've got a police chief finally hired. We have a new city manager. So some of that turnover has been addressed. Where do you think the priorities will be in the next year?
Well, I don't think city council is going to be necessarily changing or adjusting what their priorities have been over the last year. They were, you know, elected with the same kind of banner, what they wanted to achieve. What I'm coming in on is to enhance on that. And so where I'm going to spend a lot of my time and my energy is taking what I've learned in College Hill and seeing how I can help make that part of what we're doing at City Hall. So I've worked with affordable housing. We've been really successful in that balance of bringing new housing to College Hill, also protecting, preserving, and building more affordable housing. Working on the economic development side where we're adding new businesses, but also supporting the existing businesses because they can be so often overlooked and forgotten in a transforming community, which then leads to the negative side effects of development. And then really having more positive community engagement in all processes that are going on. I know I've been able to do that really well in College Hill. I want to be able to bring that perspective and that experience to City Hall. I've got some ideas that I'm not ready to talk about yet. I know that's going to be your next question. But That's where I'm going to be spending a lot of my energy. And there's going to be things that come up along the way that, you know, probably don't necessarily fall directly in those three pots right now. But, you know, when I'm thinking about day one, those are the areas I'm going to be putting my energy into.
I know Sherry likes when our podcast guests accidentally or intentionally break news on the podcast. So,
well, to be fair, I've interviewed him like 4 times in the last week.
Well, Sherry, unless you have another like heavy hitting, I'm a new council member question, I thought it'd be fun just, you know, for listeners, just to get an idea of who Seth is as like a guy.
Oh,
you know,
I like it.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So,
This is funny. I love this idea. Here we're going to go. But I do have to say, I wrote the original story, and my editor, Carl Weiser, is like, what's up with his family? Because a lot of times we put a family box at the bottom of stories, married, kids, da-da-da, whatever, okay? So I think that's what Carl meant. And I just randomly go, single. He's single. He doesn't have a family. I meant that's why there's not a box at the
bottom
of the story.
Right, right, yeah.
Nope. I didn't even notice. Carl inserted into the story, it says, Seth Walsh, 31, comma, single. Comma, da, da, da.
So that's really why you've been so busy lately, is now you're fielding not just media requests, but
I know, I've said it's always going to be like an episode of The Bachelor.
Yeah, we've turned him into the most eligible bachelor in Cincinnati. So you already.
Number one thing I've heard over the last week, it's not even congratulations on getting appointed to city council. It's like, oh wow, the Inquirer is reporting on your relationship status. That's
exciting. You're welcome. I think.
Thank you, Sharon. We'll see if it works out or not. Stay tuned.
So we already know you went to Xavier.
I do have 2 dogs, and I consider them very much part of my family. My successor in College Hill, Kate Green, she has a young son. So every time we'd have conversations during COVID with other partners, Kate would have headed off them to talk about their family, and you know, they're talking about kids, and I'd jump in and say, well, I'm a single dog dad. And it always was good for a good laugh, but I also recognize it's not at all the same, as Kate would remind me after every single meeting. But I do consider them my family.
All right. So you got 2 dogs. Are they rescue dogs, or are they purebred like labs or something?
No, they're rescue dogs. The first one I got as a puppy because I'd never had a dog before. So I figured the best way to do it is have a puppy where, like, I grew up scared of dogs, so I was trying to overcome my fear. And I did, and he and our best friends, Calvin and I. The second dog, you know how you hear of trap babies? Well, Calvin was a trap dog. I went into PetSmart one day. Rosie was sitting in one of the crates. We made eye contact. It was love at first sight. I wasn't leaving without her. 7 years later, she still hangs out by my side almost every second she can.
Oh, that's fantastic. So Calvin and Rosie.
Yep.
All right. You went to Xavier. Did you grow up in this area? And if so, where'd you go to high school?
No. Well, I grew up in St. Joseph, Michigan. So I went to St. Joseph High School. We didn't have many options there. So
the
you either went to St. Joseph or you went to Lakeshore High School.
We were how do you know that?
How do I know the St. Yeah. Because I lived in St. Joe. That was my first job out of college, yeah.
I did not know this.
I worked at the Herald Palladium for a couple of years.
And I vacationed there, so look at that. Yeah, the St. Joseph is so lovely.
So you said you went to Lakeshore?
No, I went to St. Joseph High School.
Okay, all right, very cool. Right by the lake.
I beat Lakeshore like my junior or senior year after like 20 years of losing to them. So.
Wow, so you know all about Silver Beach and...
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We'll have to
the chocolate factory.
We'll have to compare St. Joe notes later, but
yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, okay. That's wow. Small world. Yes. Okay. Yeah. But you've been here since college.
Yes, I moved down here to go to Xavier University, and like I said, I fell in love with the city, and I haven't left since, and I'm not leaving anytime soon, or probably ever.
Honestly. All right. So you've been here long enough to answer this next question: Skyline or Gold Star? Or Skyline. Fill in the blank.
What was the second one?
Skyline, Gold Star, or fill in the blank? Because, you know, some people have their favorite neighborhood, Chili Parlor.
It's Skyline.
Okay. All right. So if you have someone, an old friend visiting from St. Joe into Cincinnati, where do you take them to impress them?
Well, I'm a little biased in this because my job for the last 7 years has been to be selling College Hill. So I take people to College Hill. I show them the fun little nooks and crannies I know and have keys to, although I won't have keys to them anymore, so I'm going to have to come up with my new party trick. but I show off, you know, the new restaurants that have been coming to College Hill, from Kiki to Mastery's to Tortilleria Garcia. I take them into some of my favorite local retailers there, like Fern or Schwartz Jewelers, College Hill Coffee Company. And then we'll end up with a drink somewhere along the way. So, you know, you're talking about Marty's Hops and Vines, Brink. I try to change it up because it's not that I have friends in town all the time, but I do like to have a little bit different experience for myself as I do it as well.
So definitely, in you guys, you know, I usually write a story related to the podcast. So earlier this week, myself and Kareem, one of our photojournalists, I don't know if that was the secret tour. It felt like the secret tour. There was a lot of keys to secret places. Look for photos from this kind of inside College Hill tour, because it was pretty incredible. Both Kareem and I were there for several hours and could have stayed longer.
Yeah. The only thing that was missing from the tour, Sherry, is usually I'll end up taking people on the roof of the theater because it just has a fantastic view. But in the wintertime, we try to close that part of the tour off.
And we had to take pictures anyway.
Okay.
Kareem would have loved taking the pictures up there, but probably not the best decision at that time of the year. So next time.
All right. Do you binge watch anything on television? And if so, what?
So I'm pretty bad at watching TV because I'm horrible at keeping up with it, but I have started binge watching. I mean, it doesn't really count as binge watching, right? If you watch one episode a week, but I started watching Wednesday on Netflix recently. And then the most recent series I've been binge watched was Welcome to Wrexham, about the Welsh football team that Ryan Reynolds purchased this last year, which is really fun to watch.
Is there anything he doesn't own? It seems like no. Cell phone companies, tequila. They
obviously have advertisers on like jerseys. All of his stuff is on the jerseys. Well.
That's a good businessman.
Yes.
All right. And then my last sort of like rapid fire question is, if you have an unexpected day off, where will we find you?
What would I do?
Yeah, what would you do?
I don't know how secretive it is, although people seem to be shocked by this, but I'm a huge introvert and I love to read. So if I had an unexpected day off, I would spend the day on my couch reading a book. I have so many books on my shelf that I haven't gotten to yet, so that would be amazing to catch up on that. Fun fact about me, I've actually read a book on every U.S. president. Brendan Cole will deny this to the day he dies, but I'm pretty sure I inspired the Mercantile Library's presidential challenge that they have going on right now, because several of them are from my list I provided. I'm a big reader.
If we had time, and we are running out of time, I would patch Brendan in right now. I don't think they're all the way through every president yet.
No, I think he just told me what book they're on. I think they're right around World War II. No, Hoover. He's on Hoover right now.
Did you set out to do that, or did that accidentally happen?
I had read a book on James K. Polk. It was like really well written. I love historical books where it's like written like a fiction book. And then I ran into somebody who said, "Man, wouldn't it be cool if you read a book on every U.S. president?" And I said, "Yeah, it would be." So then I started doing it, and it's just, you know, once you get like 10 books in, you just can't stop. You got to finish. So 6 years later, I finished.
Have you read The Power Broker? Because that's like the quintessential, political book. Yes. Have you read it?
Yes.
Okay, I haven't read it. I meant to during the pandemic, and then it's so heavy. I never did.
But it's so interesting. You learn a lot from it. Good and bad, you learn from it. But I highly recommend it.
I might start that during Christmas
vacation.
Well,
so I have a follow-up then. Who is your who's your favorite U.S. president? From a historical standpoint,
it's difficult to answer that question because there's a lot of different ways you can look at that. So James K. Polk holds a special place for me just because he was the first one I ever read about, and he really opened my mind to the way we talk about these figures so mythologically, like, no, he's a real human. Barack Obama really inspired me, and one of the reasons I want to be in public service. But then, like, most interesting presidents were, like, Millard Fillmore, who's vastly overlooked. Millard Fillmore and Chester Arthur have horrible reputations in history, but when you actually read them and understand the complexity behind it, it doesn't necessarily make them a better person, but it makes the situation much more interesting. And I knew nothing about that when I started reading the books. So also, I find it so fascinating, the Revolutionary War presidents and how they created this entire country out of nothing, just a thought. That back in the day was even harder to do than how we try to do things now. So it's hard to have a favorite because it's just, there's so many different eras and so many ways you can look at that.
All right. Well, I'm out of questions,
Sherry. All right, but it's like your dog. She can't have a favorite dog, right? You can't have a favorite president either.
I shouldn't say I'm out of questions. The rapid fire round is over.
Agreed.
And I know we have to wrap this up because, as Seth has said, he's very busy right now, thanks to you.
He is going to be the youngest member of council. I do want to point that out. I didn't mean to, you know, really put out there that he was single, but it is important. I do think he is joining. I think we're starting to see a little bit of younger members of council, and he's going to be the youngest.
Youngest current member of council.
Correct.
Not in the history of our fine city, I don't think, but.
That might finally get PG to call me back. No, just kidding.
All right.
I guess I'm feeling saucy today. All right, Seth, I'm going to let you go.
Great chatting with you guys.
I know you have a lot to wrap up in College Hill. Thanks for chatting today.
Absolutely. Thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Okay. Bye.
Bye guys.
All right. This is actually no joke. Seth will be sick of me by the time it's all done. The council members, I think, are like, boy, she calls a lot. But they all do answer their own phones, and I actually love that about them.
That is good.
So anyway, we'll watch how things unfold next year with all of the new things.
I'm feeling super inadequate because I think I've probably read maybe 4 or 5 at the most presidential biographies.
I thought that was very ambitious. I do love to read.
I mean, that's a lot of reading.
Yeah. I like to read fiction, though, too. I usually read one fiction book, one nonfiction book.
I gotcha. Now, in my defense, I've probably written. No, I haven't written any. I've read maybe 3 or 4 biographies on Lincoln. But, yeah, I haven't read a book about Fillmore or Polk. That's impressive. That's a history buff right there.
And it was
right
his first one.
I know, right?
That's not where you start.
All right. So, all right. Well, Sherry, do you have a That's So Cincinnati moment for this week?
I do. And I went somewhere that I haven't been in a very long time, and I'm so glad I did.
Somewhere you haven't been in a very long time. I have no idea.
I went to the Crone Conservatory. I went for the Christmas tree lighting, which is like a poinsettia tree,
sure,
right? It's
yeah.
very fitting, a tree made out of flowers. But I also went because I was really curious to see the music hall made out of Legos. Because they have this beautiful Lego sculpture. And you look at it and you don't even think it's Legos. It's incredible. And it fits into their whole village of Cincinnati. And it's so... you could just stare at it for hours. Like, it's so detailed of all of the different things in Cincinnati.
Yeah. I saw some pictures of the buildings, the mini, cityscape in miniature.
Finley Market. Yeah. There's like the old incline going up to Mount Adams, Great American Tower, like all of the different iconic places in Cincinnati are there as part of their village, and trains kind of run in and out of them. Union Terminal. And then I asked the director of the Crone Conservatory. I went to the Washington, D.C. Botanical Gardens last Christmas, and it was like train stations, like replica train stations across America. And there was a Union Terminal there. It was so fun to see like a little bit of Cincinnati, well, just as a surprise walking around the corner. But I was like, do you let them out? And he's like, oh no, there's a couple of each, but not the Lego, not the music hall Lego. That is very, intricate.
I think we went last year to see the Christmas display at Crone. I was actually going to go Saturday, but I didn't go Saturday because I was too, I was telling you earlier, we hosted the newsroom party Friday night. And I wasn't recovered Saturday morning.
This crew knows how to party. I know we said before we were talking about my birthday party. So apparently people just really want to let loose because I didn't leave your house till like 1:30 and I was not the last to leave.
It was great. And we had fire eating. That was a random thing that happened. I didn't plan it, but.
Wait, Laura Bischoff. This is Laura Bischoff, one of our, ace, you know, state house reporter. She's considered one of the best reporters in the state for years. She's like, hurry, my husband is going to eat fire on the balcony.
So let me tell you, how this happened. So he came up to me when I was like my most, you know, like distracted in host mode, right?
Because you didn't need to make a drink for everybody individually, lovely.
We can talk about that too. But so, I mean, I'm like trying to make sure everybody has, you know, beverages and they know that the Coney bar is open and we wanted to take a group picture. And so I'm doing all this stuff, trying to get the picture organized before people start to leave. You know, it was like the sweet spot when everybody was there. And Laura's husband comes up to me and he's like, blah-bitty blah, I have a party trick, I eat fire. And I'm like, yeah, whatever, go eat fire. And he's like, well, where should I do it? I'm like, I don't know, out on the deck. There's a window right here. But yeah.
You're an Eagle Scout, right?
I am an Eagle Scout. Thanks for saying I am, because, yeah.
That was a good decision.
People say, were you? And it's like, well, I didn't get it stripped away. Right. You know? But anyway, so then I go back to what I was doing. We take the group photo. Next thing I know, everybody is crowded around the window that overlooks out to the deck. And not only is he eating fire, but he's teaching members of the Enquirer staff, including producer Phil, which, by the way,
I did not know this. I knew Jolene did it.
As a bonus, we should post the video of Phil eating fire 100%. In the podcast promo.
I didn't know this existed.
Oh, I have it. Kara Owsley took it. This divided the newsroom because half the newsroom was sitting there going, go, 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 and cheering. And the other half was covering their eyes, telling me, Pearl, you have to stop this. Someone's going to light themselves on fire. But no one lit themselves on fire. Phil, did you burn your mouth at all? Man, I'm impressed, Phil.
And I'm going to have to quiz you about this later.
Phil ate fire. So
I stayed with an employee who is afraid of fire, and I want to name this person. I stayed with that person.
Oh, yes.
I didn't want to just walk away and be like, too bad you're afraid of fire. I stayed with this person, and to be honest, my literal first thought was, my hair will catch on fire. so no matter what, I wasn't going near the fire.
It was just one of many highlights of the evening, fire eating. So, you know, my son, who's turning 17, sometimes he'll say, oh, that's fire. Like, that's a good thing. Yep. That's like, and so he asked me, he was like, was the party fun? I was like, it was fire. And then I showed him the picture and thought I was corny like he always does. But
I know, but if he was there, he would have thought it was cool. Yeah. And you weren't there. If he was there and you weren't there, he would have thought it was cool.
Well, right. Exactly. but that's just a long way of saying we had planned to go Saturday to the Crone and we were just too tired after that party.
What time did it end?
Well, I mean, by the time we got things cleaned up enough that we could like go to bed, it was like about 3:00. And I was wired because I was up and excited and I couldn't go to bed right away. So I think I finally went to sleep at like 4 a.m. And then the dogs were like waking us up to be let out at 7. So I think I got 3 hours of sleep Friday night.
It was worth it. It was a very good party.
But needless to say, I was not going to go out doing holiday Cincinnati things. So I feel really like behind schedule. I feel like, you know, I'm missing out on, we haven't been to the Crone.
There's also one last weekend.
Zoo lights. I know.
Between Thanksgiving and Christmas this year, someone pointed that out to me because I was like, I don't have anything, like, I don't have what I need to have done. But I was like, oh, it's the calendar's fault.
And I'm not like you. I'm be starting my Christmas shopping probably tomorrow. You're probably already done because you're Sherry Coolidge.
I am.
I hate people like you.
I know. Alex and I are, our gift to each other is travel, though, so it's a little easier.
That's not fair. That takes him off the hook.
Huh? You know what, though? He's a very generous husband, and
I
have some big trips on my mind, and we have to save money.
But still, I mean, some of us are still like, going, what do I get, you know, my significant other? But if you guys, like, already said travel, and he doesn't have to, like, worry about it.
Well, I think you should take Lauren on a trip. She would want me to say this right now.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll get right on that. Okay. Well, that's a good Cincinnati moment. And you've inspired me to, like, you know, figure it out, hit at least a couple of Cincinnati's wonderful holiday traditions before it's too late.
Agree. And that one is indoors, so weather it's not weather dependent.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, Sherry.